Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 15th of February. For those of you who were listening to a promo, the guest we were to have on today canceled the show at the last minute, late yesterday afternoon. So we are very happy to have another guest, and it will be it's a totally different topic. It's not medical experimentation on African Americans. We hope to reschedule that program, which is an important topic. But we're going to continue today with what will become a series of alternatives to oil. How can we heat our homes, heat our schools and businesses in different fashions? We're not concentrating on the car as we did a couple days ago. Today, it's biomass. The Biomass Energy Resource Center is in Montpelier, Vermont, and they work on projects all over the country to install systems that use biomass fuel to produce heat or electricity. They work with schools, communities, colleges, businesses, utilities, and government agencies, and this organization is an independent nonprofit organization that assists in the development of biomass energy projects. Timothy Maker is our guest. He's executive director of the Biomass Energy Resource Center. Tim has served as the director since it was established in 2001, and he is responsible for program development, outreach, grant administration, project management, and technical development for the organization. He is a nationally recognized expert in heating schools with automated wood chip systems. He is the author of Wood Chip Heating Systems, a guide for institutional and commercial biomass installations. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. If you'd like to join our conversation, we would love to hear from you. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hi, Tim. Thanks for being with us.
Kathleen.
Yeah. So is this a new alternative energy, or has this been around for a long time?
Well, I think that the idea of using wood chips, essentially ground up waste wood as a fuel, probably began in the late 70s.
Hmm.
And some of the early systems were installed in Wisconsin, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Wisconsin, upper Midwest, Michigan, upper peninsula. And I got involved about 20 years ago here in Vermont as a volunteer on a school committee that was advising the school board on what the school should do with its electric heat system. It was proving to be very expensive. And so they wanted us as a committee to look at all the different options and alternatives, and we looked at everything, including wood.
Hmm.
And we thought, well, this wood sounds like a great thing to do, and we kind of followed it along, and the system got installed, and it's kind of been going from there.
Oh, isn't that interesting? And little did you know it would lead to a whole career for you, right?
Exactly. I had no idea.
Huh. Yeah. So, well, let's start with that process. What did you look at? Why did you decide that wood chips were the way to heat the school?
Yeah. At that time, there was a growing awareness that this fairly small number of electrically heated schools in the state were a problem, that the energy bills, the electric bills, were just too high, wasn't sustainable. There had to be alternatives. And so pretty much everybody was looking at the conventional fuels as alternatives. Put in a boiler system so you could move the heat around and fire it with either fuel oil or natural gas or propane. So those were the options that were typically on the table. And for whatever reason, our little committee decided to look at renewable options as well, see if there wasn't a renewable solution. So we looked at wood chips, we looked at wood pellets, we looked at coal, which of course isn't renewable, and we just tried to put all of the options on the table and then come up with a sort of a rational way of sorting them out on on price and cost effectiveness and availability, and was it renewable or not. And the one that came to the top for us as a committee was wood chips.
Mm-hmm. So you were a committee with vision, right?
Well, I guess it turned out that way.
I guess it did.
And interestingly, the three or four people who were on that volunteer committee in this tiny little elementary school community, all now, 20 years or more later, are working in the field.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I think that the sort of the light bulb went off because in the town of Calais, that's where I live, we had a town meeting in 1986 to vote on a bond issue to put in a wood chip system, and it was discussed in the meeting. You know, we have a town meeting style government where everybody can come and all the taxpayers vote, and we discussed it, and then it came to a voice vote, and it won unanimously.
Hmm.
Nobody voted against it.
Hmm.
And so we said, aha, we're onto something here.
Right, you sure are onto something. Now, biomass is described from the literature I've read here as any biological material that mm-hmm. can be used as fuel. You're talking about wood chips. Are you involved with other kinds of materials as well?
Well, our organization really focuses on wood chips. I mean, we happen to be located in a state where the wood resource, like the one in Wisconsin, is huge.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of our land mass is covered with trees, and we also have been working in western states where the resource that people are concerned about and want to promote is forest biomass, forest, you know, woody residues. And so that is really where our focus is. We have done some work with farm methane systems using manure for digesters that create electricity and heat. We've done a little bit of that. But we have also taken a look at some crop residues as energy feedstocks. That's another form of biomass. But there's so much work to be done in this area of woody biomass that we have really kept our focus sharpened on that.
And tell me, let me just ask a basic question. Where are you getting the wood chips?
Okay, they come from two sources. They either come as the waste stream from sawmills and forest products industry businesses that have material that they can't make into usable products.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the slabs and the off-cuttings and that sort of material, which can then be ground up, chipped up, and blown into trucks and then delivered wherever it goes. So that's one source, right out of the mills, the sawmills, essentially. The other source is right out of the woods. And in a harvesting operation, a lot of the big harvesting operations, logging operations, will bring a mobile chipper right to the landing. And the trees that aren't good enough quality to be made into lumber can then be fed into this chipper and chipped right into trucks and go on the road.
Hmm.
So those are the two sources.
Mm-hmm. And do you need a lot of the chips to get to energy?
Well, surprisingly not.
Really?
A truckload is about 25 tons. So the smallest schools that we've done this with would use 150 to 200 tons a year.
Hmm.
So that would be 8 truckloads. So in terms of the number of trucks that come up to a school to deliver fuel, it's not a number that's big. It's, you know, on the same order of the trucks that are bringing in food for the cafeteria and books and, you know, supplies and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it tends to be a truck every, you know, maybe once or twice a week
mm-hmm.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a large volume. And when you add it up in annual tons and compare it to other uses of these low-grade residues, say at power plants or pulp and paper mills, it's just tiny little numbers
Interesting.
That it takes to supply one school.
And is it expensive?
No, that's what drives it. It's really the least cost fuel there is for energy.
Really?
Yeah. So we have seen over 20 years now, when we first started and oil prices were relatively low, that the wood would reduce heating costs by about a third.
Hmm.
With oil prices high now, that has gone as high as two-thirds or even 80%.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, oil prices go up and down. Same thing with natural gas. There was a time where it was hard for wood chips to compete with natural gas. It was less expensive, but it wasn't that much less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But now natural gas prices have gone up, and so wood is competing very well with natural gas as well.
Right. So does it make sense, and can you really only realistically do this in states where you've got a lot of trees?
That's true. Yeah, you definitely have to be in an area where there are a lot of trees because the wood chips are a green fuel. It's not dried. So there's, 35, 40% moisture content. That means you're shipping a lot of water around when you ship the wood chips around. So you simply can't afford to put a truck like that on
right.
the road and send it 200 miles. The gasoline cost and the diesel cost for running the truck just become a factor. So you really are looking at an effective radius of about 50 to 75 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. So it does make it very much a localized thing.
Mm-hmm.
The wood comes from a certain area, and it gets used in that area. It keeps the energy dollars in that area instead of exporting them someplace else, outside the state or outside the region or outside the country.
Yeah, so it's good for the local economy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and it supports forest products industry. In many places, I'm not that current with the situation in Wisconsin, but I don't think it's a lot different from the other places that we've been working recently. The forest products industry is a tough one. It's a you know, competition from China. There's all sorts of things going on that make the margins very slim. And if they can take a residue stream, basically a waste stream, and get a little bit more income from that, sometimes that'll be the difference between a profitable year and a not profitable year.
Hmm. So has this really taken off in places where there are a lot of trees? I guess the question is, where are you flourishing?
Yeah, Vermont has been the sort of the incubator for this technology. Mm. Even though there were this generation of systems, just a few in Wisconsin and Michigan from 25 years ago, in Vermont we now have 30 systems operational. And so about 20% of all of our public school kids
really?
Go to wood-heated school.
Huh.
Which is, you know, as a renewable energy success story, that's way up there. And other states are now catching on. We helped the U.S. Forest Service to establish a program which they call Fuels for Schools, which takes the same technology and kind of wraps it in a different package and is implementing it in 5 western states centered around Montana.
Hmm.
So, and other states are interested as well. We're working now in developing a program in South Dakota. We have a lot of interest in Colorado, in Massachusetts, New Hampshire.
You got to hop right over to Wisconsin. We're natural for this.
Yeah, we are planning to do that. As a matter of fact, one of my staff people is going to be speaking at a conference in Wisconsin within the next couple of months, and we have done some work in Wisconsin, but the program hasn't taken off there yet.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that it will.
So you're saying that the program at that school where you were on that committee some 20 years ago, obviously it's worked well. That school's still using wood chips, and as are 20%. There's a great fact about Vermont. 20% of the schools are heated by wood chips. Who would have known that? So it's obviously been working over the long haul.
It definitely has. The equipment has turned out to be reliable. The wood chip pricing has been very stable. I mean, I think that's been a big advantage compared to the conventional fuels, which tend to spike up and come down and, you know, be volatile based on what's going on all over the world. But wood chips, because they're such a local energy source, tend to be very stable in pricing.
Mm-hmm.
So that has worked very well.
Tell me, Tim, about these, because I know that they're instrumental in putting forward alternatives to fuel, the clean energy funds that a lot of states have to advance renewable or clean energy projects.
Yeah, the clean energy funds in most states are funded by a very small, essentially a tax on the amount of electricity that an individual ratepayer pays. So they pay a little bit more on their electric bill or their gas bill, and that money goes into funding a statewide fund that can then be used for renewable energy projects. Because it's based on electricity sales, most states have restrictions that say it can only be used on projects that create electricity, which cuts these school projects out.
Mm.
Now, my understanding is that Wisconsin is one of the places where what we call thermal projects, in other words, heating projects, are also qualified to use funds from the state fund.
We're going to welcome phone calls for Tim, and we'll take them in just one moment. Tim Maker is executive director of the Biomass Energy Resource Center, established in 2001. He is an expert in heating schools with automated wood chip systems. He's the author of Wood Chip Heating Systems, a guide for institutional and commercial biomass installations. He has developed, he served as project manager for 10 schools that have installed or are installing wood-fired heating plants in Vermont, Maine, and Montana. He's also developed wood energy systems in community and public housing settings. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. To you in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Okay, we go to phone calls for Tim. Our lines are filled, which is great. I know there's a great deal of interest in renewable energy, alternatives to fuel among those of you who are listening, so this is good. Brian from Hartford, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my phone call.
Sure.
my question is in regards to homeowners and compost piles. Now, I know compost piles naturally give off a certain amount of heat. I'm curious how much heat and if there's any way for a homeowner to harness that heat to help heat their home or to use it in any way. And if not, what options are there for homeowners to use biomass?
Well, the answer is that there is no technology that does what you want it to do. It would harness that very low-grade, low-temperature heat that you might have in a compost pile and put it to some productive use. I think that if you get up to a larger scale, what actually happens in a landfill is that methane gas is produced in that composting process, and landfills are actually mined or drilled to extract the methane gas, which then can be used to produce electricity. But at home scale, not really. So really the technologies for home scale use of biomass are the wood stove and the pellet stove. Or those are, you know, space heater options or also whole house you know, central systems. They could be either boilers or furnaces using hot water or warm air to distribute the heat around. So those technologies have been around for quite a long time. I guess from that perspective, the pellet stove or the pellet boiler is the new kid on the block, and we see more and more of that. People who like the convenience of pellets and don't want the kind of hard work of lugging around cordwood.
Anything else, Brian?
No, that's
okay.
It. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Bruce from Trevor. Hi, Bruce.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. This is a very interesting topic. And I was, when I first started to dial, I had a huge question. But now that I've been listening, I've narrowed it down a little bit. And especially after that last caller. I love this. This is think globally, act locally.
Mm-hmm.
I had questions like, how many wood chips are there? But then you say you have to transport them, and that costs money. And yeah, there's all kinds of other inventions that could spring out of this sort of thing. And I could leave my comment at that, but what is the wood chip supply? And could this be expanded? I guess maybe not beyond the woods. But my huge question is, do we have enough biomass, or could we generate enough biomass? Are there enough acres of different kinds of places? You know, you grow wood, but somebody else could grow, switchgrass or
right,
something?
Right, right.
How big could this get?
Tim.
Those are great questions. We find that in all of the different places around the country where we work, the wood supply is huge compared to the small amounts that would be used by schools or college campuses, those kinds of things. If there are other energy technologies that use wood that would take a big bite out of the available wood. For example, a power plant. Here we have a couple of power plants in my state, and they use something like 300,000 tons of wood a year to keep a power plant going, whereas all of those schools that we talked about, the 30 schools, use about 20,000 tons. So you can see there's a big order of magnitude difference in the small community uses compared to power plants. If you listen to the national energy debate, you'll hear a lot about cellulosic ethanol, and you'll hear a lot about biorefineries, which are sort of, I guess you'd say, industrial scale uses of the wood, the low-grade wood feedstock, to replace transportation fuels and liquid fuels. So we think that there's a tremendous range of or realm of possibility for greatly increasing the use of wood for these small-scale, community-scale heating applications. But frankly, we get a little worried at the industrial-scale ones because they would use so much wood and could basically use up the resource beyond the level that is sustainable over a long long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you also asked about, well, what about crop residues? You know, what about biomass that's grown in fields? Is there a possibility there as well? Well, yes, there certainly is. And the same issues are there. If you follow the debate, there's a lot of development work that has gone on in the last few years around corn ethanol, creating a gasoline substitute. And it's already beginning to impact the other markets for corn in ways that maybe weren't foreseen. And so you also hear switchgrass and other grasses mentioned as the feedstock for these cellulosic ethanol plants that are being developed. They're not commercially viable today, but they are being developed, and a lot of money is being put into them. Mm-hmm. So they could be fed either with wood residues or with crop residues. Mm-hmm. When you get to that scale, then you have to really think seriously about the long-term, sustainably available resource.
Thanks, Bruce, for your call. Cindy from Menominee. Hi.
Hi. I'm so grateful to hear you speaking about this. We're used to having electricity that can be used in any capacity, you know, private small home to a large university and industry. And so maybe we just need to think differently about these other types of resources that this one that you're describing sounds like it's good at a community level, sort of a mid-level, and we need other things for other. I wanted to ask specifically about any information about conversion costs in a school, for example. Of course, it's going to be always different depending on square footage, and I suppose, and all that. But if you could just address that in any way.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
What we have found for the wood chip systems for schools, the hardware cost is somewhere around $300,000, depending on the size of the system, the size of the school. But there's also a construction cost. You have to build a building to house the boilers. So you need a boiler room as well as a chip bin, which is a large volume below grade bin with a building on top of it. And so when you build that necessary building infrastructure, it pretty much doubles the cost. So you might see a total system cost of $600,000 or $700,000. So clearly this isn't a quick payback kind of thing. It takes a school that has, you know, a 10 or 20-year horizon for their decision-making. They're trying to do things in that kind of a time frame. And schools turn out to be, you know, willing to take that kind of investment approach.
Thanks for the call. We go to Norm from New Auburn next. Hi, Norm.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, are these chips dried before they're shipped?
And the answer is no, they're not. In fact, the systems that burn these fuel at sort of the school-sized systems like green chips. They like the natural undried moisture content, which goes between about 28% on the dry end, up to maybe 45% on the green end. And our resource here in the Northeast is mostly hardwood. That's what we encourage people to use. And I think that's largely true in Wisconsin as well. But when we work out west, we find that the resource there is softwood, and the moisture contents can be a little bit higher, or they can be very low, too, because there's a lot of natural drying in that arid environment there.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call. Frank from Madison. Hi, Frank.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think you touched just barely on this in a comment earlier, but my question is are you strip mining the topsoil? And in effect, how do you sustain the topsoil so you can keep, you know, this crop coming in? It sounds like you're using all the tree, and you haven't said anything about whether something gets put back in the forest. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you scatter the ashes on the woodlot you got it from, or what? In effect, you know, whenever I drive back from Nebraska, I pass some rest stop on Interstate 80 that has a little history of how the topsoil has gone down 20 feet since civilization arrived in that area. And I don't know, that worries me that we might be turning the place into a desert by, as it were, strip mining the topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can address that, thank you.
Okay, good question.
Sure, that's a great question. What we find is that this works best in places where there is a commitment to caring for the forest on the long term. And you, I think you find that most forest landowners have that, and certainly the state agencies that are involved in forestry have that and do everything they can to promote good sustainable forest practices. These kinds of uses are the lowest grade or the least economic value of any. So nobody goes into the woods to cut down trees for energy. They're there for other reasons. They're cutting higher quality trees that are used for lumber. What we recommend is that when chips come directly out of the woods, that they use only the what's called the bole of the tree, the main stem of the tree and the major branches, and the tops and the small branches are left in the forest because that's where all the nutrients in the tree are. And then that returns nutrients back to the soil. You suggested the idea of taking the ash from the combustion process and putting it back in the woods. It would be a great idea to do that. Nobody has figured out a practical way to actually do that. But I think this concept of leaving the tops and the green material in the woods to keep the nutrients there is a responsible way to do what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about alternatives to oil to heat our buildings, actually, this hour, biomass. And our guest is the executive director of the Biomass Energy Resource Center, which was established in 2001. And it's an interesting background. They were looking at a school, local school, some 20 years ago, and came up and how to heat this school and looked at all the alternatives and came up with wood chips. And as a result, he's been dedicated to biomass for some years now and very, very interested in it. And now he's traveling all over the country, advising, you know, heading up projects and advising schools, 10 schools that have installed or are installing wood-fired heating plants in Vermont and Maine and Montana. And he's developed wood energy systems in community and public housing settings. Tim Maker is our guest. 800-486-8655. And we go to Audrey from Green Bay next. Hi, Audrey.
Hi. I'm calling in regard to the smoke that is produced by the wood-burning boilers that people have. I live in the country and walk a country road, and suddenly this fall, my dogs would start sneezing as we were walking, and I noticed that I was having more difficulty breathing. And as I rode into town on a later day down toward the city, I noticed there were three houses along the way, it's country living, with these boilers that heat their homes. And I thought, could that be the source of the breathing problem that I saw on the days when the wind was out of that direction? In other words, what are the health ramifications of a system like this?
Audrey, that is a great question, and that's one of the most common questions that we get. There are so many different ways and so many different scales at which wood can be burned for energy. Everything from a fireplace in your living room up to a wood-fired power plant. And the smaller it is, the harder it is to do it right. And at the residential scale, it's the hardest of all. Hmm. You know, with a wood stove, that's why EPA stepped in and started certifying wood stove manufacturers in the early 1990s, because they were just concerned that there was such a wide variety of design equipment out there, and they felt that it really needed to be upgraded. So they did that. But our organization has basically felt that it's so hard to do it right at the residential scale that we're going to concentrate on the larger scales where you can do a much, much better job with emissions control. So the kinds of systems that we're involved in putting in schools and college campuses are much, much cleaner than anything you could ever do at the residential scale. For example, we find there's a school near here that is a big high school, regional high school, 200,000 square feet, about 1,000 kids in the building plus staff. That school has the same particulate emissions as 5 residential wood stoves. Hmm. So big difference in mm-hmm. cleanliness. You know, the school system produces about 1/18 the particulate pollution of a wood stove on a per BTU basis. So that's part of the answer. Now, what you were experiencing was probably the outdoor boilers, and they are notorious smokers. And for that reason, the EPA has gotten very concerned and is just in the process of passing a set of regulations on the manufacture of these outdoor wood boilers, setting emissions standards that they have to meet. And a number of states are also involved in that process.
Thanks so much for your call. We go next to Lori from Oconomowoc. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I was just wondering if there was any research being done on leaves being used as shredded and compacted and used to heat homes, because leaves grow a lot faster than trees, and every year when I'm raking them, and some I can burn out in my area, but all that smoke going up in the air and all that heat wasted, and I'm thinking, is there some way we can use leaves?
Lori, I'm not aware of anything. I think one of the problems with leaves is that it's such a light, diffuse kind of, you know, undense kind of biomass that to really do it right, you would have to pelletize it. And to collect enough leaves to be able to pelletize and have a viable, you know, business in pelletizing, I don't see that on the horizon. So I think we're just going to continue raking our leaves and doing what we've done all these years.
Hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Lori.
Right.
Jack from South Range. Hello, Jack.
Hi.
Hi.
I just want to make a point about those just using the bowls and leaving the tops of the trees behind. I have experience with 20 years burning in one place using wood for heat, and the amount of ashes is tremendous. That ash means minerals. It means fertilizer. It means stuff taken out of the soil. So even if you just take the wood, you're taking a tremendous amount of fertility out of that soil. I've seen it over 20 years, and just tremendous amount of ashes. You're not just taking a little bit, you're taking a lot, and that soil is being made poorer and poorer if you don't return those ashes to the soil. It's not a little bit, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
When we first started working in this, we had that concern, and what we learned when we started looking at the emissions and ash characteristics of wood burning in the kinds of technology that is being installed in schools, we found that it was much better, and the ash production was much lower compared to industrial wood boilers, which was a complete surprise. We thought that these big ones that you might find at a sawmill, these have been around for decades, would be, you know, the standard for technology cleanliness, but that wasn't true at all. What we're finding is that the school systems for a tractor trailer load of wood coming in are producing about two-thirds of a trash can worth of ash. And that, I don't know how to make a value judgment to say whether that's good or bad, but it's certainly a lot better than people expect. When you get to the large scale, like a power plant, for example, where you might be using hundreds of thousands of tons of wood going in, then at that scale, clearly what you're suggesting, Jack, is just what is in fact done in many applications, where the ash is collected and it is used for some productive purpose. It can either be spread on agricultural fields. I know of cases where that's done, or it can also be made into a mixture with limestone. It becomes a bedding material for road construction.
Hmm.
So that's what I can say on that.
Mm-hmm. Where have you found, I know you've done work with schools, community organizations, public housing settings, is the most logical place for this kind of technology, for this renewable source, schools or other places as well, Tim?
Yeah, it has caught on in schools, and you know, there are, you know, probably 50 school systems around the country at this point. But we think that actually it's a better match for college campuses, where you already have a central energy plant and buried piping that takes the heat from that central plant and distributes it to all the buildings, so that buildings don't have their own individual heating system or heat-generating system. So we think that's a really good scale. And we're, you know, encouraging college and university campuses to do that. There are probably 20 campuses across the United States that use wood as a fuel, and we think there's a lot of room for growth there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. We go to Dennis next from Central Wisconsin. Hi, Dennis.
Hello. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Not so bad. Pulling a load of wood chips right now.
You're what?
I'm pulling a load of wood chips.
Oh,
right
for
now.
Heaven's sake. We got the right guy on the phone.
Oh, I don't know if you got the right guy. But I know a little bit about it. It's something that I'm glad to be working in because it does a lot of good for the forest. It's a whole tree chip operation. They've got a Morbark chipper that you put a whole tree in, and it chips it up bottom to top. We don't leave anything in the woods, and consequently, the woods are somewhat park-like when we get done. Opens the canopy up, lets the sunshine in, more trees grow back. I mean, it's a sustainable resource. This portion of Wisconsin has been looked at as nothing but a fiber mill for the pulp mills and things like that. So it's just doing what it's supposed to do.
Tim, why don't you respond?
Yeah, I think my only response would be that if you talk to foresters, there is a real debate about the idea of how much nutrient material can be taken out of the forest without returning it and still keep the forest in an ecologically good place.
Yes.
And what we hear from the foresters who we work with is that that simple removal of the whole tree, chipping the whole tree, taking it out of the woods and not returning anything is going too far, and that leaving nutrients behind is an important thing. And so that's why our recommendation, when people come to us and say, how should we do this, what's the responsible way to do this, is this concept of the using the bole of the tree and leaving the tops behind.
Mm-hmm.
However, I mean, there are plenty of places that do it. We have two wood-fired power plants in this state that have operating permits that require them to have foresters certify every sale that produces wood chips that goes to the power plant, and they do whole tree chipping. The whole tree goes through the chipper.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some foresters who think that's going too far.
Yeah. Where are you going with your wood chips, Dennis?
I'm going to PCA.
To where?
PCA in Tomahawk.
Uh-huh.
You know, a piece of cardboard? I believe what they make is the little center part, the little corrugated.
I see.
But I've been doing it for a long time.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of other people doing it for a long time, and there's still trees out there.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Bye. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Timothy Maker is our guest, Executive Director of the Biomass Energy Resource Center. Our number is 800-486-8655. In Milwaukee, it's 414-227-2050. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Betty from Superior is next. Hello, Betty.
Hi. He was talking about leaving the tops of the trees for nutrients in the forests.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my concerns is when those, they may give nutrients, but when they dry out, isn't that a danger of contributing to forest fires? All the dry debris in the woods in the summer when it gets warm and dry?
Yes. The answer is yes, and that is a particular problem in the western forests where the conditions are so much drier than they are in here in the northeast where I am and in the upper Midwest where you are. So we don't see as hazardous a condition here as they do see in those western states. And in the western state, the whole thing is about getting that material out of the woods so that it can't burn. But there's forests are much more overstocked than ours are. These are public lands that are administered by the federal government, and they've been suppressing forest fire for decades, and now that has kind of come, those birds have come home to roost, and now they're trying to figure out how can they get that material out of the woods and find a productive use for it. But I think in Wisconsin, whereas there is a problem, I think that good forest practices can address that. In other words, the size of the slash piles, the extent to which the tops are cut up and those sorts of things, I think can address the forest fire risk.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Mark next from Holcomb. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
I thought it was interesting. I was coming back from a meeting, and I jumped out of the vehicle. I'm a principal in Holcomb, Wisconsin, and we've been using wood chips to heat the school.
Oh, great.
Since about the mid-70s.
Ah.
We've had other schools that have come over and have looked at our plant. Our plant is starting to age. In fact, we're going to have to replace the main firebox. But we like it.
Hmm.
And it, the source of our wood chips comes just a few miles down the road from a place that part of it is just scrap.
Oh, my. Interesting.
So it's chipped, brought in. There's a little bit of labor because of unloading the chips, and the system is a little bit older. But it really has made a big dent in our fuel costs, especially when we start networking and looking around at what other districts around are paying for fuel to heat their buildings.
And tell me the history of how you made this choice. This has been there for some time.
I think it had to do with looking at what was in the area, what was available for fuel, the viability of the of fuel. We had a lot of forest products in the area. It's been in longer than I've been here. I've only been here about 7 or 8 years.
Tim.
Well, interestingly, I have visited that school.
Oh, you have?
Years ago, yeah.
Oh.
When I first got into this, after the first school project where I was a volunteer, I started incorporating it into my consulting business and decided that if I wanted to really understand it, I had to see a lot of examples. So I went out to the Midwest, and I spent some time in northern Wisconsin, and I went to Holcomb.
Hmm.
I think Barron has put in a fuel system like that, much larger than what we have here.
Mm-hmm.
There's another school over in the eastern part of the state, northeastern part, that actually is pumping the heat in a couple of different buildings. That seems like it's a little less efficient because it has to go to so many different places. But here in this small district, there's only about 450, 500 students, so it's just one building, K-12, and it works very well.
Hmm. Oh, that's great.
One of the things that we have done as we evolve as a young organization, we started out being involved in individual projects, helping to do the initial feasibility studies and helping the site owners with the school district to figure this out. But what we are now focusing more on is programs, state-level programs that would put in place all the structures around finance, around technical knowledge, wood supply, working with the forestry people, so that more projects can get built. And, you know, so what we're doing that here in Vermont, but we're also helping states like Wisconsin to take the knowledge base that was, you know, started way back in the 70s, as Mark points out, and to pull that together and make it available to more and more schools so that you can get rid of the barriers that prevent schools from being able to do it, you know, not enough information or whatever, and make it possible for a lot more schools to go forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, and two big things we had to look at were the source of the fuel, where is it going to come from, and also the servicing and keeping the structure up. Those seem to be two big key things.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks, Mark. Glad you were listening.
Bye.
Let's go next to Judy from Reedstown. Hi, Judy.
Hi, I have two questions. One is, we have a lot of fine particle sawdust that's generated from sawing up logs with a laser blade, and I'd like to know if there's any kind of equipment that could use that directly for fuel, or if it has to be processed into something, and what are the economics of processing it. And the other thing I was wondering about is our coppice trees, do they have a big enough bowl to produce the kind of wood that you would use for the chipper that you now use?
Well, I'll take those one at a time. The sawdust is a valuable fuel for energy, and most sawdust that's used for energy is either used at the site that produces it. There are sawdust burning boilers that can do that. If you have a thermal need in your mill that is, you know, matches the amount of sawdust you have, or it can be sold to a wood pellet manufacturer. And a lot of sawdust goes into manufacturing pellets. So those are the main outlets there. We discourage schools from using sawdust as a fuel. For a couple of reasons. If it's green sawdust, then it has a tendency to freeze in the truck or in the bin where you store it, which is obviously a problem. But if it's dry sawdust, it's very combustible, and we think that there are safety issues that just don't make it sensible to put that in a public school. in a sawmill where you can be right on top of it and take responsibility for every aspect of handling the dry material and protecting against fire, then it makes sense, but not in public institutions. On the question of compost trees, which basically is creating an energy crop, just like a field crop, but instead of plants like grain, it's trees. And those systems or that technology is used to some extent, not so much in heating buildings, but more in producing a chipped fuel that goes into power plants. And what they will do is a coal-fired power plant that may have a problem with high sulfur emissions can substitute about 10% of the coal going in with chipped energy crop trees that then reduce the sulfur emissions.
Hmm.
So, but as we move from a point where there's lots of available low-grade wood residues to meet demands, new demands, and those new demands use up that available resource that comes out of sawmills, then people are going to start looking at new ways to come up with fuel supply from wood, and we think there's probably going to be an expansion of crop trees for energy.
Thank you. I'm taking notes. Thanks.
Great, Judy. Thanks for the call. Do you use a wood stove in your house, Tim?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Yep. And it's interesting because as a nonprofit organization, we're very committed to doing things right. And that's the reason, as I explained before, why as an organization we don't get involved with residential scale technologies, because we think that they just can't be made to be as clean as we would like them to
yes.
be. And so at home, I feel kind of bad, that I'm using a technology that I know is nowhere near as clean as the systems that we're putting in schools.
Mm-hmm.
But people who live in rural areas are common sense people, and they know they can get wood, and it's local, and it's
yes.
available, and it's low cost. And
right. Yeah, yeah. John from Minnesota, hi.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Hi, I'm down near Wausau. I'm a truck driver. A woman called and asked about, leaves and that type of thing. I've been working on an idea with a fella for a couple of years now. I have an old, what's called a roto baler. It makes the small round bales. And what the idea we've been working on is we've been baling brush and trash, grass, these fields that have been allowed to go back. And every other year or so, you can chop these fields or cut these fields. And with this old baler, you can bale it into a bale approximately not quite 4 feet long and 22 inches in diameter. And what you end up with is, and they burn well in these small boiler units. And these things burn for hours.
Tim.
Well, that's a really interesting concept, and things like that have been done. In Scandinavia, there is a really thriving industry around using straw from grain crops, the straw, and baling it, just as you described, and taking that to the local district energy plant, which they have a lot of in parts of Europe, and the energy plant uses these bales then and has specialized equipment to handle the bales, so it's all automated, and feeds them into a huge boiler and makes heat and electricity out of it. So in many senses, Europe is ahead of us in this area, and I think that as we go further down the road of using up oil and gas resources, a lot of these things that sound like a kind of a new idea from out of left field are going to start looking very sensible. We're going to see a lot more of it.
Right. Thanks so much for the call. We have time for one more phone call. Dennis is calling from Wisconsin. Northern Wisconsin?
Hey, Kathy. Good program today. I haul sawdust into these pellet mills that make the wood-burning pellets.
Oh.
And while our company hauls the chips into the paper mills, and we also haul bark and stuff into for their boiler fuel. But the thing that concerns me, I burn pellets myself in my house, and for $3 a day, you can't beat it. But the only problem is going into these pellet mills, you can I could see that the supply and demand is so high.
Mm.
How long is it going to be before these pellets are going to be up as high as the gas prices are now, you know?
Mm. Yeah.
That's a great question. I've been, you know, a colleague, I guess you could say, of people who manufacture pellets for 20 years now, and they will come to me and say, well, so how come you're working so much on wood chip systems? We don't hear much about pellet systems. And I say, well, you know, the economics has to work for the customer. You have to be able to save money compared to oil. And historically, that was a problem with pellets. It was a very convenient fuel for use in a home stove. But when you get up bigger than that, the economics really wasn't there. And they would say to me, well, as soon as we get going as an industry, then you're going to see the price of pellets go down. Well, now they're getting going as an industry, and I see the price of pellets going up. So I don't know where that's going
to
go.
We have to say goodbye. It depends on how they decide to
price their product. If they index it against oil and say we'll always be 10% cheaper than oil, then they're going to go right up with oil.
Tim, thanks so much for being with us. Tim Maker, and if you want more information about what he's up to, you can go to this website. It's Biomass Center, all one word, BIOMASSCENTER.org. Tim Maker, the executive director of the Biomass Energy Resource Center, our guest. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dem. We'll be with you again tomorrow on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.